Ted, did you catch anything?
We did, Graham. We caught a lot.
Did you?
Epic might be too strong a word, but it was a good trip.
Nice.
A lot of big fish, you know, nice. Walleyes over 20 inches. And
it wasn't too cold, was it?
It was not. You know, it was not below zero. Maybe one day, a few degrees at night. How are all of your travels? Did you make all your destinations? And
we did. We covered a lot of miles, but I tell you what, we had a ball. We had good weather when we were up in Minnesota. Like you, it wasn't too cold,
yeah,
which was nice. And then we were back here for a day, and then we just had a ball in New York. I mean, we ate a lot and we walked a lot and we saw those two great shows, the shows were fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds like a great trip. And how was the weather in New York?
You know, it was fine. It was warmer there. It was in the 50s, I think, most of the days we were there. Now, it was rainy, a little rainy, but that was a trade-off for having a little warmer.
Yeah.
But, we stayed a couple blocks from Central Park, and we were able to walk in Central Park every morning without too much, you know, it just wasn't cold at all. It was gray, and as I say, it was a little bit rainy, but we only got caught in the rain one time, and it really wasn't even that bad.
Nice. We had great weather way up north. I know Minneapolis got clobbered while we were up there.
Right.
But it was cleaned up before we went back through.
Yeah, we shot the gap there. We came back before that storm, so we were in Des Moines before that storm hit, but.
Hey, Rachel, I just got a text from Diane that said she's having trouble getting in. I don't know if maybe you could send her the link again so if she'd have a fresh one. Maybe she could try that.
But it was fun. As I say, the shows were fun. It was fun to see that the Wilson play with Samuel L. Jackson was really great. That was a great cast. And the musical, Kimberly Akimbo, was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. It was hilarious.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not familiar.
You will be. I think it will get quite a bit of Tony buzz this year. If it does, I'm sure it'll be a traveling show in a blink.
Maybe we'll get to see it in Des Moines.
Yep. It's got all the makings of a show like that. Good.
I know Diane was having issues, but maybe we'll go ahead and get started. I think I'm still chair of this committee, at least till the end of the month.
Yes.
With that, I'll call to the start of the Des Moines Water Works Planning Committee meeting. Today and Tuesday, January 10th, and I'll just have folks introduce themselves as they speak. And hopefully Diane will be joining us soon, but we'll go ahead and kick off with the Government Relations Legislative Affairs update.
Thank you, Andrea. That is the topic of the day, government relations, legislative affairs. We've got representatives from both Advocacy Strategies, who does our local state government affairs, and Woodbury Associates, who does our federal legislative affairs, here with us today. I want to point out that the memo, the packet that we sent out, there's good information in there. We probably won't cover it because of time here today, but there's good information about the accomplishments for the year at both the state and federal level. There's a memo there. There's also our actual state and federal priorities that we will cover today. But the specific goal here today is for each advocacy and Woodbury to give us a little bit of a session preview, talk a little bit about the legislative situation, both at the state and federal level, and then also talk a little bit about our priorities. I understand advocacy is going to go first. I'm not sure whether it will be Nick or Teresa who is sharing the PowerPoint, but whichever one, I will hand it to you and we can get started.
Thanks, Ted. I'll take it from here. Hello, everybody. Teresa Harms here with Advocacy Strategies. Thrilled to be here with you today and pleased to report that we have had a wonderful start to the 2023 legislative session with the start of our legislative breakfast this morning. We had over 40 legislators from both Republicans and Democrats attend this morning along with staff. So we're excited to see that. Rachel, do you have our PowerPoint to put up for me?
Teresa, I'm adding it. Right, I'll share it right now. I brought it up.
Thanks, Nick. Well, so I'll just briefly, so a big shout out to the senior management team and the for being at the State House today and being willing to talk with policymakers. I know it was a little bit out of their comfort zone for many of them, but they did an excellent job and made sure to connect with their own legislators as well and talk about the priorities that we've set out. So kudos to everybody. And as a result of that, we had an opportunity to sit down with the Ag Chair in the House, Mike Sexton, who is new to that role, and with Representative Tom Jennery, who is the new Ag and Natural Resources committee chairperson, and Representative Jennery has actually asked us to come and present to the Natural Resources Committee and provide an update. So we're thrilled for those outcomes. Nick, you want to go to the next slide? So as Ted said, there is an update in your packet to talk about some of the successes we had during the 2022 legislative session, and much of that revolves in these three categories. Mostly a lot of relationship building, of course, not only in and around the Capitol, but with those who have relationships with policymakers that can help with that. And then just engaging legislators as well on whether it was the tenant delinquency legislation, the one call legislation, retaining state funding. So those are all items that are much to be celebrated. We expect some of those things to be up again, but have really set the tone for the work that we do and have been doing all through the interim with our partners and new partners at the State House as well. So the 2022 legislative session preview, or now that's underway. So just a couple of things to note. So largely the same leadership in both chambers. The one significant change to note is Amy St. Clair is the president of the Senate. She was elected by her colleagues in November after the election. Jake Chapman was the sitting president, and he was not reelected in the Waukee-Adel area. He actually lost to Sarah Trone Garia, who then took a leadership position with her caucus. But to note that both Republicans, we still have a trifecta with the governor winning re-election as well, and the House and Senate both grew their Republican majorities in both chambers. the top issues that we're expecting to see and what we've heard in the first few days of the legislative session include education, education, and education, and then property tax reform. So that's essentially what we're hearing. We have seen and heard a few things about gun reform, and then some legislators are also talking about workforce and regulatory/government efficiencies, those sorts of things. But for the most part, as expected going into the election, that education and parental choice are leading the pack along with tax reform. The session timeline. So of course we kicked off yesterday. We held our legislative breakfast this morning, again, with great success, and kudos to everybody who made that happen. And again, a huge shout out to Rachel for all that she did to get invitations out the door and a breakfast set up and all those sorts of things. So thank you, thank you, thank you. The next significant date to note would be March 3rd, which is the first funnel deadline. All policy bills need to be out of their respective, through their respective committees. And then on March 31st, just 4 short weeks later, then they need to be through one chamber and out of the committee on the other side. And so those are, self-imposed to help keep things moving along and get things prioritized as they make their way through the end of and look towards the end of session. Scheduled adjournment is April 28th right now, but we'll see whether or not they can make that deadline. As most folks know, we were into the end of May, beginning of June last year, and we also had a April adjournment date. So fingers crossed, knock on wood. So legislative priorities and the things that we spent a lot of time talking about today. Again, maintaining water quality funding has been something that we've continued to work on over the years, but most significantly about that is having conversations about focusing those dollars on in the areas where it's most needed, the Raccoon and Des Moines watersheds, but then secondarily making sure that those monies are seeing results for for the work that they're going to. So really an accountability provision there are some conversations that we had today. The Urban Ag Seeding Partnership and talking about that and looking for opportunities for funding to see if we might be able to find some resources for another cover crop seeder. And we spend a lot of time talking about getting the federal lead service line money available where it's needed without a lot of red tape and really availability. And so that was those were a lot of our conversations today or around those. And certainly with the Des Moines school system shut down today with cybersecurity, I have a feeling that we're going to see cybersecurity continue be an increased conversation.
Yeah, one thing I'll add is over the last year, Des Moines Waterworks has really increased our partnership with the associations Waterworks is a member of. So we've done a lot of collaborative work with the Iowa Rural Water Association as well as the Iowa Association for Water Agencies. And that collaboration, those two last bullet points on the agenda are really in collaboration with those groups. And I just heard actually 10 minutes ago that Senator Waylon Brown, the Commerce Committee Chair, will be filing a one call bill, which Jenny Puffer and Ted and Jen have been involved in working on that language in advance because of those partnerships. And they're also the ones you'll see in the memo on our successes last year. We held a really successful roundtable event at Rathbun last fall. So those relationships just continue to grow, and we're working collaboratively with partners to try to see if we can't move the needle a little bit up at the State House.
So I would just end and welcome any questions that you all have, but I would just say that I'm so proud of the collaborative relationships, as Nick just mentioned, that have really strengthened over the course of the last few years, and a true testament to The work that we've been doing, not only the partnerships, but the relationship building, not only at the State House, but with leaders throughout the state and the local surrounding communities, to be asked to speak at a legislative committee and provide an update on what we're doing. All of those things are certainly positioning Duane Water Works in a different light as we move forward. So happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, we'll pass the baton over to Gavin and his team.
I'll start with a question. Did you guys, anybody hear anything this morning at the legislative breakfast from legislators that wasn't on our radar, or that anything to consider or to note, I guess?
I'll speak first, Andrea. That's a great question. And I don't think I heard anything that we've not heard or talked about in the past. You know, folks certainly brought up other issues like soil health and those types of things, but they're things we know about, but we aren't necessarily intimately involved in. So, but I would open that up to anybody else. We haven't had a debrief yet, and so that's a great question to be asking today.
Yeah, I don't think I heard things, Andrea, that I would put in the unexpected category, but the thing that was surprising to me is the number of legislators who said that they would like to meet with us and talk to us about our thoughts on lead service lines, for example, or the Natural Resources Committee chair asked if we would come and give the Natural Resources Committee a presentation this session on water quality challenges here in Central Iowa and the initiatives that we've undertaken to try to address that. And so I was impressed with the amount of engagement, but I didn't hear unexpected things like in terms of, you know, their focus or their priorities. We honestly probably led them down the path of talking about our priorities for the most part, but I thought it was a pretty positive session.
I would agree, Ted. I would also add that Representative Sexton is a farmer up north of us in our watershed who also is interested in meeting with us. He farms in the Raccoon River watershed, a couple hundred miles north, 100 miles north. So yeah, that's pretty cool too. He wants to talk with us about some of our watershed projects.
Hi, this is Diane. I'm sorry I'm late. I had trouble getting on, so I'm on the phone. I have a question whether or not anybody had any questions about regionalization and what's going on there. And maybe you addressed this when.
We didn't address it. Diane, it's a good question. And I did have a couple of legislators ask me specifically what was going on with regionalization and how we thought it was going to turn out. And interestingly enough, the legislators I talked to about regionalization were not in our region, but they'd heard about it and they were just curious and wanted to know. I can't tell you their names, unfortunately, but one from the Cedar Rapids area. And another, and they were just interested and wanted to know how it was going and if we thought we were going to get it done. I don't know if anyone else had conversations with legislators in our region about that topic.
I didn't have conversations with legislators in our region, but had a similar experience with Ted. Had several legislators outside of our area ask about it.
And what did you tell them?
I said that we've worked hard, that we're still working on the details, but we are working to bring it together.
I had another question when you talked about collaboration. I just was curious as to what kind of collaboration you do with IAMU. We are a member, aren't we?
We are a member.
Yeah, we've collaborated with them up at the State House on issues, especially like the tenant delinquency issue that's come up, and we try to fight every single session. They have new representation this year, so we're just working through that as they change who's representing them up at the State House. But that has been a collaborative relationship in the past.
Who's representing them this year?
Mark Beltram.
I think important to do about that is that Mark is new to them and he'll be serving as just as they'll just have a contract lobbyist, so an external person as opposed to an in-house person that they've had in the past.
Thank you.
Any other questions from anyone else?
If not, I think we can, Andrea, we can turn it over to Gavin to give us the federal perspective.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I'm Gavin Kling with Woodbury Associates in Washington, D.C. I'm joined by my colleagues, Lindsay Vidniks and Charlie Husser. Charlie's sharing the screen, so thank you, Charlie, in advance. Want to start, much like Teresa did, how important we value our relationship with Des Moines Water Works and our ability to help represent them here in Washington, D.C. You always receive a very warm reception from your delegation, and they're interested in your issues and priorities and have worked hard on your behalf. And so I want to flag that up front from that perspective, but also the support that we've received from the leadership team, Ted, Jen, Amy, Jenny, Mike, et cetera, always responsive and helpful as we put this together. Much like Therese did, we want to start with a little bit of a congressional overview of where we are in the 118th Congress. We can go ahead to the next slide, Charlie. So last week, the Congress was sat, the Senate came in and swore in their new members, the House did the same. Different from the 117th and 118th is we now have a divided Congress. And so the Republicans took control of the House of Representatives while the Democrats were able to maintain control of the United States Senate. So unlike the previous 2 years where it was unified control and we saw a lot of large ambitious legislative initiatives and proposals, this divided control is going to tone that down quite a bit, and it's going to come down to some of the more mundane legislation that needs to be passed, the blocking and tackling that we're going to see, along with some enhanced congressional oversight, which I'll talk about in a couple of ways where I think it can help us leverage a little bit of what we're working on at the state level as well. Next slide, Troy. As you all know, the delegation remained largely the same. The one change is Representative Zach Nunn was elected in the Iowa 3rd. That is the district that directly represents our service area. And so that's an opportunity to introduce him a little bit more to Des Moines Water Works, what our issues are and what our needs are. And so we're looking forward to building that relationship, building that bridge. We don't know yet his committee assignments. And so we'll be waiting to see as those come out. He has been vocal in his desire to be on the Financial Services Committee. However, as a freshman, that may be not something that's available to him. And so we'll see where he lands and where he might be, what issues might be of most highest priority to him. Sorry, we can go ahead to the next slide. So much like advocacy strategies, we had a good 2022 and we had a lot of successes. And so our 2023 policy priorities are going to build off some of those successes as we move forward. So the first one that we work together on is increased resources for infrastructure funding. We know that this is an incredibly expensive industry to be in. And so what we're working on is to help try to free up some of the funding that was provided in the last Congress. So the bipartisan infrastructure law nearly doubled the drinking water revolving fund, and it put some flexibilities in there. And so what we're hoping to do is work with the delegation to make sure that this funding flows not only as low interest revolving funds, but also as grants and forgivable loans as the legislation set out. And so we want to work with the delegation and with the EPA to ensure that they're giving direction to the states about flexibility, the need for flexibility in allocating this funding so that it can be used quickly and to the best benefit. Next slide. To the what we've already heard, and many of these are going to mirror exactly what the state priorities are, quite frankly. Lead service line replacement is another one that we're working closely with Des Moines Water Works and advocacy strategies on ensuring that the federal policies that are in place around lead service lines that's the state policies. And so EPA has finalized a rule, or is finalizing a rule that will require a lead pipe inventory. So everyone will have to inventory to find out where their lead pipes are. EPA will then come forward with rules for replacement of lead service lines. And so we'll be waiting to see what that works on. We want to ensure that they're aware of the nuances that come with some of these systems, who owns the service lines, and other considerations. Also, that cost is a consideration in these decisions. And so we want to make sure that we continue to raise the visibility for the need for ongoing federal investment to support this infrastructure replacement. Harmful algal blooms remain a focus, not only at the state level, but at the federal level. Working with the delegation, the Water Resources Development Act was amended this past Congress, right towards the end there, which added the Upper Mississippi River Basin as part of a harmful algal bloom demonstration program. This is important because it gives the Army Corps of Engineers more tools to look at research this issue and how this issue can be addressed on areas that they control. And then we're also working with the Department of Homeland Security on the same, as taking a look at what kind of a threat harmful algal blooms are to drinking water infrastructure. Finally, EPA and the federal government as a whole is taking a very strong look at PFAS. This is a multifaceted look. They're looking at PFAS liability, both for the manufacturers, but also for other people in here. And then they're also looking at cleanup and devoting significant resources to cleanup. EPA is issuing rules. They will be coming out with the drinking water health advisory. They came out with that during the past year, which set a very low threshold, which is not really attainable, nor is it even measurable. And then we know that they're coming out with a rulemaking that will also set a national drinking water standard. And so we're working with our associations on those issues to make sure that they're aware of the challenges that come from any decision they make, even if it's just the public statements that they're making. And so we want to make sure that we're communicating real world experiences to them so that they can factor that into their decision-making process. Next slide. And then much like the state is experiencing now, there's a big focus in the federal on cybersecurity compliance and cybersecurity threats. And so we've seen a number of presidential orders and other rulemakings that are requiring infrastructure, so critical infrastructure such as water systems, to make sure that they're up to date on their cybersecurity compliance. So we're watching that closely to make sure that Des Moines Water Works is aware of any changing federal requirements in that space so that they can comply and they can get into early compliance and simple compliance. Those are kind of our five big buckets. They mirror much of what we hear at the state level. Happy to answer questions.
Hey, Gavin, Diane. I was just going to have, before you might have questions about this too. Gavin, if you could speak a little bit to the PFAS and Senator Ernst's work on the NDAA and where we might see that going. And I don't know if Mike McKernan has any more to add, but.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So one of the things that we worked on, and we work closely with, in particular, Senator Ernst, but also Senator Grassley's office, is ensuring that any PFAS contamination at the airport, particularly around the Air National Guard, is addressed. And so it was included in the Defense Authorization Act 2 years ago, which required the Secretary of Defense to issue a report not just about Des Moines Airport, but about all of the Air National Guard and other military bases, which ones have contamination or suspected contamination, and what might be needed to clean those up. And so we worked to get that language included in the defense authorization. And then we worked with the senator's office to make sure that DOD actually issued that report. So that report came out midway through the year. And from that report, we'll continue to work to make sure that there's resources, that they get the funding that they need so that they can address that challenge. And that's an upstream a challenge for us. And so we're hopeful to work closely with them to make sure that they have the resources they need in order to address that.
This is Diane. I had a couple of questions. One is on PFAS and the EPA and I'm going to call it a standard, but I don't know if it was a directive or what that they put out that was unattainable. Did they get any pushback on that, or has there been anything since then? Because my understanding was that it was something that was not attainable? That's my first question. And I'll get an answer and then I'll ask my second question.
Sure. Thank you. That's a great question. So they issued a public health advisory. And so that is not, it's not a regulation and it's not mandatory or binding, but it is an indication of their thinking. And so that was the concern. It is that, to your point, that that's not a level that's detectable at this point in time through current technologies. And so putting that out there in the public domain, that that's the achievable goal or the goal to be achieved, certainly caused concern and confusion. And so there was obviously communication back and forth, particularly through trade associations, but others as well, letting EPA know the implications of that public health advisory. The hope would be that they would take that into consideration as they move into the next phase of actually issuing regulations. EPA's response was muted, but they certainly recognized they were putting forth an aspirational target as opposed to an operational target.
Gavin, I would add to that I think there was significant pushback from the water industry. And on kind of on two fronts. One was just the fact that the drinking water health advisory level was orders of magnitude below the current ability to detect PFAS in the water, which makes it impossible for anyone on earth to say whether they meet the standard of the health advisory or not. So there was just kind of a technical issue there that water utilities had, but also they pushed back pretty hard on the level of confusion that was potentially going to cause, that no one knows whether they meet the standard. No one knows what they're supposed to do now. Are people supposed to stop drinking the water or not? Is bottled water safe? I mean, it was just a whole raft of confusing messages that we had to fight through. And the water industry was pretty swift and pretty vocal in their pushback on that. As you said, EPA's response was pretty minimal, but I hope that they take that into consideration when they set the standard, which we think is forthcoming, but really don't know the exact timeline on.
It just seems so odd that they would have gotten something so wrong and then to put it out there and confusing makes you wonder about the kind of technical capability or what kind of assistance they were getting to do that. Anyway, my second question is for Ted, but we know where all of our lead service lines are, right? So that whole mapping thing, we're ahead of the curve on that?
You know, Diane, we have a very good idea where they are, and I'm not going to say that we know 100% where they are, but we have confirmed with the DNR that they're willing to accept what we are calling an algorithm that we use to determine whether a service line is likely to be lead or not as a starting point. So yes, we know that if a service was tapped before 1940 and it's half inch or 1 inch or 3/4 inch is probably lead. There's still a big hurdle for us to get over in that we are expected to provide this inventory to DNR, which isn't just the map that we've created. It's literally a spreadsheet that shows all 80,000 of our customer services and what material they are from the main to the stop box and from the stop box to the house. We don't necessarily know what material the service lines are from the stop box to the house. We don't really have any way to know that or data on that. So we have a good idea of where we have lead in our service territory, but we have a lot of work to do to comply with the EPA's inventory requirements here by the deadline, which is, I believe, sometime in 2024. Maybe Jenny can help me with that date, but we still have a lot to do. And Jenny, would you add anything to that?
No, I wouldn't add anything. It is October 2024, October 16th, 2024. So we got a little time, but we got a lot of work to do in that short amount of time. So.
Right.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Not hearing any. I appreciate both of our partners presenting this information and the work you're doing for us at the State House and in DC. I'm sure Jen will keep us posted as things come out throughout the next few months and throughout the year. Let us know how we can be helpful as board members during this process as well.
Will do. Thank you, Andrea. Mm-hmm. And thanks to your team for presenting today too.
With that, I think we turn it back to you, Ted, for, sorry, I've got way too many windows opened on my computer here, but I believe we turn it back to you for some comments.
Thank you, Andrea. I just have a couple of things I want to highlight on the legislative front here in my comments today, a couple on the federal side and a couple on the local side. On the federal side, you'll note in the memo that talks about our accomplishments legislatively on the federal side, we did, as you all already know, get some changes in WERDA that included the Upper Mississippi River Basin as a focus area in WERDA. Also the NDAA, we were able to get the Des Moines National Guard, Air National Guard site here at the Des Moines Airport, identified as one of the first 50 sites that will be receiving a remedial investigation. Those were huge things. They were very powerful things, very valuable, but I think it's important to note that that's just the beginning, and we need to continue to push on those things to get what we need and what we want out of those. And that's part of what we're going to do on an ongoing basis here this year, is ensure that now that we've got those very positive outcomes, that we continue to get the results that we need, that we get the focus on water quality here in Iowa, specifically in Sailorville, out of the authorization that was placed in WERDA, that we get the remedial investigation completed at the Des Moines International Airport. Was included in the National Defense Authorization Act. So there's much more work to do. We're really pleased with what happened in both of those cases, but there's more work to do there on the federal side. And that's part of what Woodbury is going to help us do. On the state side, I just wanted to share that we had a great event this morning. 44 legislators came and stopped and visited. And many had breakfast, some didn't. They just stopped to say hello or whatever, but I found it really valuable today to have a couple of very specific asks that we could share with them related to, you know, funding for additional cover crop seeder, the ag urban seeding partnership. There's a lot of interest in that, a lot of discussion about it, not universal support, especially from the legislators who are also ag producers. You know, there's some skepticism there, but that's healthy and it helps us build a better program. But also the funding mechanism for lead service line replacement. There's a lot of interest in that and across the state. And so having worked with Nick and Therese and Jen and the team on, you know, what are the specific asks? What are we going to talk to them about? They tutored us a little bit on, you know, you're going to have 3 minutes of their time. You know, you need to hit what you want, and they're going to be interested if you can be very specific. And I think we were. So I think that was a great event. And I was very pleased with the outcome. Thank you to the entire senior management team that showed up this morning. And many of them invited their legislators to the breakfast and had the opportunity to visit with them. It's a very positive thing. And I think that's it for me today, Andrea, just a little follow-up on the topic of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate all of the senior management team that turned out to that. Having done some legislative breakfasts myself, I know it's not always the most comfortable thing for folks to do, to have to start conversations and have conversations that are not part of their kind of normal daily activities. But I appreciate everyone taking the time this morning to do that. The next item on our agenda is public comment. I see some names I don't recognize, but I'm not sure if we have public on the line or not. So I'll give a minute of silence here. If not hearing anyone speak up, I'll go ahead and adjourn the planning meeting for today.
Very good.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.